So, there's a big question in education. I'll use a baseball metaphor, even though 3/4 of our group doesn't follow baseball. So we don't have any cultural reference to baseball. Josh is here, so. So should you swing for the fences? When you play baseball, you can try to hit the ball as far as you can. If you hit the ball over the wall, it's called a home run, it's extra points. But when you try to hit the ball so far, you can strike out a lot. So that translates into a real educational question. What type of model do you build? Should you try to swing for the fences and try to create gedolim and try to push people with aspiration and ambition and intention and achievement? But the cost and human toll is very high. Because when people are pushed beyond their limits, first of all, you create an environment in which it's an all-or-nothing binary equation. If you're not a gadol, you're not ultra-uber-successful, then you see yourself as a failure. It can lead to a lot of emotional stress and emotional frustration. Rev. Aaron would always quote to us the story of John Stuart Mills, who was a 19th century utilitarian author. And evidently, he was teaching his younger brother Latin at the age of six. He was six. Five. He was teaching his brother, and one of them, I forget which one, had a nervous breakdown. I think it was John Stuart Mills himself. So when you push people so hard, you can compromise their emotional well-being. Emotional well-being is a state of human condition we've become more sensitive to in the modern era. 200 years ago, we had very little clue into the human psyche, how humans operated, what human happiness was. Human happiness was you fit into the cosmic order. You knew your place in the cosmos. And now we're much more existentialist. We've deconstructed human psyche, and we want to try to build well-being, self-esteem, emotional happiness as a platform for religious achievement. So, to a degree, Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Amital were a little bit different in this respect. Rav Lichtenstein was sort of a spent swinger, and he pushed us and he challenged us. I'm not trying to make it binary, but Rav Amital was always proud of the fact that his tradition in Hungary, his tradition was more to create healthy, happy balabatim, not necessarily to create gedolim. And to a degree, it was reflective. The great gedolim tended to emerge from the Lithuanian yeshivos, from Slobodka, from those yeshivos, and the Hungarian environment produced a lot of healthy balabatim, but not in the same sense. Again, it's much more Hasidic. It's comparing apples and bowling balls. It's a little bit different to talk about the gedolim here, gedolim here. There were a lot of gedolim in Hungary, but they're Hasidic. In any event, Rav Amital was very proud of that, and to a degree, it informed the yeshiva. He tried to create a yeshiva where many gedolim emerged from the yeshiva, but at least there was a curriculum and a framework that allowed for health, well-being, emotional happiness, satisfaction with religion across the board to as many tamidim as possible, as opposed to, let's say, some of the more powerhouse yeshivas in Europe that were gadol factories, but maybe at the cost for many people who were emotionally distressed or went off the derech. And those are two very different approaches, but obviously, when you try to create one singular aspirational model, it's easier for people who don't fit to feel excluded, easier for people who feel excluded to walk away from the entire enterprise. So Rav Amital felt very proud of that as a Rosh Hashiva, and certainly proud of that as a father and as a family member. He talked about how he had raised his children, and certainly in my own life, I'll tell a particular aspect of this story, but when I've tried to navigate with my own children, and whatever I felt that there was an issue that really laid at that seam between achievement and happiness, I always try to decide with happiness, knowing that long term I would create healthy, emotionally well adjusted people that would then be able to become more religious in a gradual fashion. Anyway, the story that he always tried to tell stories about, the Rami tells stories. The story he always told us was his attending a bris of a relative of his in the Haredi world. And the little boy was called Tuvia. That was the name they applied to the boy. But during all the speeches, everyone started referring to this 8-year-old baby as Tuvia Eloy. Tuvia Eloy. Eloy means the brilliant one, the great Talmud Chacham. So at some point, Rav Amital went over to his relatives and said, "Did I miss something? I thought the boy's name was Tuvia." So they said, "No, he should get used to hearing himself called an Eloy. We want the boy to get accustomed to hearing himself called an Eloy at the ripe old age of 8 days old." So evidently, Rav Amital said he went ballistic. He said, no, when he spoke, he said, just grow up to be a happy, well-adjusted balabas, who's an Ayin Hashem, who's a Reish Shemayim, who's an Ayin Yisrael, and whatever more you can accomplish. That's obviously a goal, but it has to come on the baseline of just happy, well-rounded adjustment. And before you be an Eloy, just be a Tuvia, as it were. Just before you're an Eloy, just be a well-adjusted young man. And he told us another story, which I forget right now, but it's very similar to that. And as I said, it's informed my life, both as a Rebbe, as well as a parent. But also as an uncle. does it. One of my nephew's bar mitzvahs, his name is Asher, Asher Tarragon, if you ask him this, he's very proud of this story. So some of the uncles, I have to say from the other side, but some of the uncles got up and were describing how he should be a gadol, and a great, great person, aspirations and achievements, but you obviously want to heap all these expectations on a bar mitzvah boy without making it too burdensome, but you want to give him a little thrust, a little boost. And at some point, in a very innocent way, again, it wasn't sinister, but to me it just reminded me of the Ramitel story. One of the family members said, and it's now time for you to be a bar mitzvah, to stop being a child, to be an adult, and you can't have no more chocolates for you, no more chocolates. This is my Ramitel moment. So I got up as the uncle and said, trust me, I have a different masorah. I live with a great person named Rav Amital, and he told me that first become a happy person. And I said, Ashi, I want you to continue eating chocolates even past your bar mitzvah. So everyone laughed about it, but that became almost like a mantra that whenever he saw me, he said, don't worry, Uncle Mesh, I'm still eating my chocolates. So at his ufruf, when I gave a speech, obviously 10 or so years later, I gave a speech to him, and I gave him the bar Torah, and I said, Ashi, very happy you listened to my advice, and I gave him a chocolate. I said, now you're on your own, but now I can trust you to eat your own chocolates. So the Rav Amital's version is, don't call your child Tuvi Ilui. The Moshe Tarragon version is, keep eating chocolates. But it's the same thing. It's an approach to education. Obviously, each person will dose it differently and will calibrate it differently. But the great toll you can exact and pay if you push people to the point where they feel choked and they feel like they have to succeed. If they don't succeed, they're absolute abject failure. You may pay a price. You may pay a price in achievement. But in terms of the human toll and not achieving one by trampling human hearts, I think it's certainly a worthwhile perspective. That's the Tuvia Eloy story. Okay. See you tomorrow. So we'll talk about tomorrow.
Have a good week, everyone.